WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On this archive edition, we have an interview with Matthew Broderick, who's starring in the new comedy Inspector Gadget. He plays a security guard who's blown up while trying to thwart a villain. His body is reworked and refitted with all kinds of gizmos, and he becomes like the hardware store version of a superhero. In this scene, a scientist, played by Jolie Fisher, is explaining to Broderick how his new body works.
Okay, so if you want to operate one of your gadgets, you simply say, go, go, gadget, and then you name the device.
Well, couldn't I say something more official, like, in the name of justice?
Well, you could, but it wouldn't work.
But go, go, gadget, it sounds so...
My father designed the program, and he...
It's go, go, gadget. I really like it.
Okay. Good. I'm glad.
One of the movies that made Matthew Broderick famous was the high school comedy Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So it was fun to see Broderick play a high school teacher this year in the comedy Election. He plays the teacher who oversees the school's student government elections. He dislikes the super achiever who is running unopposed for student president. Here he is convincing the school's star athlete to run against her.
You're one of the most popular students at Carver. You're honest, you're straightforward, and you don't crack under pressure, as we all saw in the amazing fourth quarter against Westside. All the kids look up to you. Now, what does that spell? Student, council, president.
Oh, me? Oh, no, I don't know anything about that stuff, Mr. M. And I mean, besides, that's Tracy Flick's thing. She's always working so hard at it.
Yeah, no, she's a real go-getter, all right.
And she's super nice.
Yeah, yeah. But one person assured of victory kind of undermines the whole idea of democracy, don't you think?
But Mr. M.
I mean, that'd be more like a dictatorship like we studied.
Matthew Broderick's other films include Godzilla, Glory, and The Freshman. I spoke to him in 1995, just after he opened on Broadway, in the revival of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, the Frank Lesser musical about office politics and sex. It was Broderick's first Broadway musical, and he won a Tony for it. Here he is singing on the cast album.
You have the cool, clear eyes of a seeker of wisdom and truth. Yet there's that up turned chin and the grin of impetuous youth. Oh, I believe in you. I believe in you. I hear the sound of good solid judgment whenever you talk. Yet there's the bold, brave spring of a tiger that quickens your walk. Oh, I believe in you. I believe in you. And when my faith in my fellow man all but falls apart, and I take heart, I take heart to see the cool, clear eyes of a seeker of wisdom and truth. Yet there's that slam, bang, tang, reminiscent of gin and vermouth. Oh, I believe in you. I believe in you.
Gotta stop that man.
There's something very cynical about, you know, the story of How to Succeed. But what really shines through everything, I thought, was your affection, and I'd have to say all of the performers' affection for the material. There was just this kind of like love for the material, for mm-hmm. the whole Broadway style, I thought, that seemed to go into the show.
That's
and that was just a real pleasure.
Yeah, well, we do really love it. I mean, the more you work on it, it's a just really beautifully constructed thing. I love all the songs and all the dialogue that Abe Burrows wrote. It's just very funny, and it remains funny.
Is there a different energy that you feel in a musical than you feel in a drama or a comedy? You've done dramas and comedies on Broadway
right.
before.
Well, there is a little bit. Somebody once said that, you know, the book scenes, which are, you know, the scenes that aren't songs in a musical, are really can be thought of as part of the music also, so that there's meant to be kind of there's more of a rhythm to things, you know, whereas in a straight play or a comedy, you can sort of take your own timing. A musical seems to all, you know, people get more and more excited until they're so frantic that the only way they can express it is to sing.
Right,
so,
right.
So you have to, everything has to build up to so that these songs don't come out of nowhere. So it's a little bit more of a rigid form in a way. It's, you know, some of the Neil Simon comedies I've done are a little bit more, you can let them drift in different directions, which is fun. But they don't always have these bookmarks that you have to get to, you know, these songs.
No, I know that you worked with your father, the late James Broderick. I think your first professional role was in a play with him?
Yeah, it was not a paying role, but it was, yeah. I did a Horton Foote play with him when I was 17 and at the HB Studio here in New York.
So he played your father?
He played my father, and we were both Southern, and I was a sort of bad son, a bad seed or whatever.
What was it like to be getting your start in playing with your father on stage?
Well, it was it wasn't all that easy for some reason.
I can imagine. I mean, people can't learn to drive often from their father.
No, yeah, and I tried that one too. I remember my father tried to teach me to drive, and he would make me so angry and nervous that I remember once winding up on a grassy median between two roads, just in the middle of a field. With him, you know, yelling at me. So
you don't want this to happen on stage.
No, I remember the job was then given to my sister, and I learned very easily. But yeah, there is something about. He was a great help to me when I was, you know, when I was doing plays in high school. He would be, you know, come and watch and give me great advice. But when I was actually working with him, it was not so easy, and he would, you know, a lot of the scenes were him being mad at me. And he would yell at me with this Southern accent, and which just sound, it's just it was hard to take seriously for some reason. It just felt like Dad being a ham.
So he'd yell at you in character.
Yeah, you know, in the scene, you know,
right,
brother, you're not taking care of business the way you ought to, you know, whatever. And I would just think, Dad, you know, you're making a fool out of yourself or whatever. It was kind of hard, and I think my total lack of experience too, but. It was a big, you know, it was a big step. But once I did that one, the next one was all the easier.
How did show business look to you watching your father when you were a kid?
Thrilling. I loved being around the theater, and I didn't even know if I wanted to be an actor. I really kind of didn't want to be an actor, but I did think I'd like to do something in the theater, you know, like run lights or paint scenes or anything, because I just liked the atmosphere. You know, for some reason. And I loved being in the dressing room and watching him, you know, put on his makeup and stuff. Well, it was a little bit like, you know, when you're a kid and you watch your father shave.
Mm-hmm.
It had that kind of romance, you know. I thought it was great.
You grew up in Greenwich Village.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever want a more suburban family life or a more traditional family life than the one you had?
No, I had friends who were in the suburbs, so I used to love going there because they'd have a big backyard and a field, you know, and you could throw balls around and stuff, and I did like that. But I loved, I grew up in the village, you know, it was I loved it. I loved Washington Square Park. which was a little different back then. And I liked it. I had really good friends, and we found a lot to do. I was very happy.
We'll hear more of our 1995 interview with Matthew Broderick after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Matthew Broderick. One of your early roles was in Torch Song Trilogy, and you were in it at the start when it was off Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And you played a gay teenager who's adopted by the main character, the Harvey Weinstein.
Firestein
character. Were you advised against playing a gay role that early in your career, that everybody would assume you were gay and you'd be typecast?
I was a little bit. I had an agent who said, I don't think this is advisable, just because it's your first thing. He incidentally, was probably gay, which is also an interesting thing about the world. But anyway, I was so desperate to work. I'd like to say I was brave and moral and all these things, which maybe I was, but I was also just desperate to work. And I also loved the play. I thought it was really funny and a great role. So I never occurred to me to listen to him. I just thought, no. And now I of course I think it's fine. I don't think people think about that risk too much anymore.
You were discovered in that play.
Yeah, no, it worked out. It was this teeny, rotten little theater, and the play was over 4 hours long, and nobody was coming, and it was going to close before its run was over. And a critic, I think Mel Gusso from The Times, happened to come and wrote this rave, and that made all the other critics come, and before he knew it, we were this kind of little hit. And then we moved to, they redesigned and made beautiful this theater downtown, which was right near my house. And we all moved there. And then, of course, later it went to Broadway without me. But it just was it was very fortunate, because when I got the job, it seemed like a kind of nothing little job. And once I was in it, it turned into this big deal. I might not have gotten the job if it had been known it was going to be such a thing,
So did anyone assume you were gay and therefore couldn't play straight roles after seeing you in the film? In the play?
No. I mean, maybe people assumed I was gay. I don't know. But I never, I got the Neil Simon job basically from that, which was a straight teenager. I mean, that never seemed to be a problem. I would get some fan mail that assumed I was gay, I remember. But, I never seemed like stuck in. I never got offered only gay parts. And in fact, I don't think I got offered any other gay parts.
Did you get a lot of letters? Dear Matthew, tell us if you're straight or gay.
I just remember one that was from a man who said, oh no, it was from who I had met backstage, and his son wrote me this long and crazy letter, which was, he didn't speak English that well, so I can't describe how strange it was, but I remember it said at some point, Matt, I am gay and my father is too. Are you as well? If not, perhaps you would enjoy my sister's sexy looks. And it had a picture of this boy and his sister standing in the Mediterranean up to their knees. And he just looked like this kind of chubby, rich boy. And next to him was this sort of scrawny, like Diane Arbus-like sister, holding a soda or something. And I thought, wow, I wonder what her life is like with a gay father and brother, and they're offering her to the straight ones. It was a very weird.
Did you write back?
No, but I kept the letter for a long time. But I don't have it anymore.
I think for years in movies, you were playing younger than you were in real life.
Right.
Like in War Games and Ferris Bueller. How old were you when you made those films?
When I made War Games, I was 20, and I was playing a 17-year-old, which is percentage is much younger. And then when I did Ferris Bueller, and I was still playing high school, 18 or something, I was I think I was 23. Yeah, that's right.
Were you afraid you were going to get stuck in teenage films?
Yeah, I was. I was. I was also because Ferris Bueller was this big success, and I think that there's always a desire to for people who have a similar script or whatever to think, well, we'll have a success if we use the same formula. So you get, they lead to the same role coming over and over again, more or less. So I was a little bit afraid of that. And I sort of consciously tried to play older things, which I did, which was a bit of a struggle because a lot of them would turn out not to be very successful or whatever. So it's been a bit of a struggle to let the parts age along with me.
I enjoyed you in The Freshman, where you're a film school student, and mm-hmm. you're studying The Godfather in class, and of course right. then meet Marlon Brando, mm-hmm. who's got some Godfather-like stuff of his own happening on the side. Was it fun to work with Brando? Did his films mean a lot to you when you were coming of age?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I thought of him as the best actor in the world, and I still do. So, I remember being sent that. I liked the script too. Andy Bergman wrote it, and I said, "Well, who's playing?" I don't remember if I. Anyway, I found out that the role was being played by Brando, and like everyone else, I was skeptical. I remember going in for a meeting with the director, writer, and a producer, and I said, "Is this real? Is he really going to do this? Because I don't think he'd worked in a long time." And I remember they had a wallet filled with photographs of them with Brando, you know, in Tahiti. And they would say, "See, here we are shaking his hand. Here he is saying, you know, he really is coming." And I said, "Wow, it's fantastic." So I joined right on, you know, just for the opportunity to meet him.
Is he really quirky in how he does scenes?
We rehearsed more than I would have thought. He kind of liked to rehearse a little bit, and he would work on he'd change some of the dialogue a little bit when he rehearsed.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember him when I would act opposite him, that he was just the most lively thing in the world. He's so interesting to watch, and he's so involved in you that you have only to, you know, pay a little bit of attention to him and you'll be fine, it seemed to me. I mean, it's a little bit like, you know, I remember in soccer, you know, with the good players, would, if they pass you the ball, it goes right to where your feet are. So you end up having an easier time and looking better. And he seemed to me one of those actors that just makes your job much easier because he's passing you such good stuff.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
Matthew Broderick, recorded in 1995. He's starring in the new film, Inspector Gadget. This is Fresh Air.